Welcome to Around the Reel with your hosts, Aaron Carlson, Charles Lawson, and Samantha Hanna. Ah, shit. Here we go again.
You are somewhat always ready to do something.
We just don't know what.
You're happy to be back on your ball, though, I see.
No, we're scared.
Hello.
That's Dolly in the back, right on cue.
Oh, yes, yes.
Glad you're here, man.
Yeah. Can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I appreciate all you do. I tune in from time to time, so,
awesome.
To be here.
Oh, that's
long-time listener, first-time caller.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah,
thanks for letting us know you're out there listening. It keeps us going.
Yeah.
It keeps us going when we know.
Yeah.
That's
well,
awesome.
That's the story of an artist, isn't it, or a filmmaker. I mean, we wouldn't do this if it weren't for an audience.
Damn
that's
right.
That's right. We got to have them.
Some of us want audience more than others. Isn't that right, Sam? Because I love an audience.
He's a little more
I love it.
Into the audience. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah.
We just got back from our last podcast. We did a trip up to Seattle, and that was a lot of fun. We took the show on the road.
We took it on the road for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was crazy.
And the only problem we had was the Wi-Fi crashed for a half second, and we lost all the video feed. So our next podcast that you guys will be hearing, which is the one you're hearing before this podcast, if that makes any sense, is going to be a partial visual, and the rest will be story time.
Right.
Yeah. And there's a lot. I added a bunch to it, and it's out now, but it turned out good.
Yeah.
And you know what's weird, Chuck? Technically, since we're on the show right now, we might as well technically, because we try to help people with things. And
absolutely.
And
we're
people
all
may
about
think
helping
that.
And back scratching people and
all that stuff.
Rubbing them the right way.
Get on with the story.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, people have issues with gear and whatnot, and stuff happens, and they don't know what to do, and you just kind of work through it, right?
Right.
So we work through it just fine. But Chuck was very proud of himself, saying that, you know, he was the last one that had his Wi-Fi because he hooked to a cellular phone. Do you know you were the only one lagging the entire time in the beginning of the show? And I think that you booted everybody out of it.
You booted us all.
Because you froze.
Fault.
Yeah, you froze. Everybody froze.
How could I boot everybody if I wasn't connected to the same Wi-Fi?
I don't know.
It's just funny.
It is.
But we're here today.
Yeah, sorry. Ward, you know us. This is what
we
do.
Yeah, we just kind of banter a little bit.
Because we got to fix stuff.
Yeah.
Got to fix stuff. Anyway, okay. So let's get to Ward, shall we?
Yes, we shall.
Would you please introduce yourself to the audience for us?
Yeah, my name is Ward Serrell, and I'm a filmmaker out of Port Townsend, Washington.
All right, Ward,
fellow Washingtonian.
Yeah, Port Townsend too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. it's a good little villa.
Oh gosh, it is, especially for an artist.
Absolutely,
yes.
This community supports the arts, and that's pretty remarkable. I get to make the films I want to make, and we actually have this amazing theater locally, the Rose Theater, that I at least know I'm going to get some kind of a theatrical release when I get a film done.
Yeah, very man. Fun. That's awesome.
I make films for the big screen. That's a kind of a church for me, as opposed to the little screen, which I know most people watch on. But if I can get it into a theater a little bit, I'm happy.
You love cinema.
Yeah.
You like it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's cool.
It's a communal experience to me to get community into a place in the dark, in quiet for a while, taking the same journey.
Yeah.
That's a great place for me to be.
It becomes more and more special as the time goes on, doesn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
It really is a huge difference. I have spent less time sitting in the theater saying, shut the hell up to my children. At home, I say it all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Yes, it is important. Plus, there's something about seeing your work on the big screen that just does something to you.
It's crazy.
It's something, I can't put words to it, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
it is truly bigger than life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is to make it at that scale. And then I like to stand on the back and actually watch the light playing off the sides of people's faces as the reflected light from the screen. And I can't quite describe this, but when I am there, I feel like I'm in my dharma, you know, my life purpose.
Yeah. It's like a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
And the fascinating thing to me is everyone's watching the same story, but they're actually taking their own individual journey in terms of where they are with the story. Mm-hmm. And everyone is going down the same river of, you know, discovery. So I love that.
It is very cool.
It is a cool feeling.
It's an art form in itself.
Yeah, yeah.
It is.
Yeah, the times we did. I remember the first time we did one and we were like so stoked. I was so nervous. It was so scary. And then you see everybody coming in their ward and you're like, oh shit, look at all these people.
Look at all these.
And they're coming to see what you made, dude. Like that's crazy.
Yeah, and the thing I always freak out, no matter how big something gets or famous it gets, I always think nobody's going to show up.
Right. Oh, me. That's me. I always.
I'm mad when I only see a few people show up that I know. Like, I'm like, where's all the people that are supposed to be here for sure? And they're not here. But then there's always all these people I don't know that show. And then we're like, oh, I love that. That's I've learned
exciting.
To accept that now where I'm not. I don't care if the people we know don't watch our shit. Fine. Whatever. Go. But when you get all those strangers coming in, that's even better because that's a brand new experience for them. Remember the dude that came into our movie that was just walking by the theater? And he's like, hey, what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And he just bought a ticket and he came in and watched it?
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Which time? That happened for GPO? It happened
for Outrider? Oh, yeah, that did.
It happened for both.
I remember the Outrider guy a lot. That was the first time, first experience. That's a great feeling. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. So we always do premieres for our movies because it is fun to get everyone together in the theater, isn't it?
It's a great feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, okay, Ward, so you're making movies up there in Port Townsend. And I kind of looked you up a little bit. So did all of us did. And we've seen some
stuff. Don't worry, it's not weird.
No. You've done some great stuff and you work some
It's
great
called
people.
Research.
We have an excuse to stalk people.
That's
you know?
Right.
Women say I'm stalking, whatever.
I think right after Sam and I started dating, we fell across your older film that you did, the basketball
yes,
one.
And we were
the Hard Knock Game.
Yes.
Yeah, and we remember watching it.
Yeah, and I didn't even I think, you know, bat an eye at it until today when I was looking at some of your IMDb stuff and I saw it and I'm like, we've seen this movie. We've seen this movie. Yeah, and that was a big deal.
It's kind of a big deal when you pick up a camcorder and make your first film and, you know, it goes to Toronto Film Festival and Miramax picks it up. It's like, no way.
Yeah.
You're like, what the hell?
How surreal is that?
It got that kind of a ride, which you don't get
anymore. Was that your first?
I mean, the elite of the elites of the top 0.1% of documentary filmmakers now can maybe get that kind of a ride.
Right.
But it's that rare.
That's amazing.
Yeah, very rare. We're
mostly in the world of self-distribution now. I mean,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah. Yes, we do know about it. We are filmmakers. I myself am a documentarian, so But yes, we definitely saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Like a
I
while
know we
back
did.
And yeah, I know we did.
Yeah, and it was based up in Seattle, if I remember right.
Yeah,
it was a great movie. It was a great movie, man. And Sam asked a question.
Was that your first?
Was that your first film?
Yeah, it was. So the one we're just rolling out now, Dancing with the Dead, Red Pine and the Art of Translation, that's my fourth.
Fourth.
Good for you, buddy.
Fourth feature, long form feature, yeah.
Okay. So, and you've done lots of shorts too, right?
Lots of shorts, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great, great thing. Okay, so let's talk about your new film then, the Dancing with the Dead. Tell us a little bit about the premise of that film and then we can roll into some stuff.
It's kind of remarkable. It's this
very
Western,
remarkable.
Yeah, this Westerner who is a master of ancient Chinese poetry who goes in search of a lost tradition in China, and he finds that tradition and in the process becomes one of the most famous people in contemporary Chinese culture today. And his name is Bill Porter. He lives here in Port Townsend, and his pen name is Red Pine. The tradition that he refound was the tradition of mountain hermits in China who go into the mountains for spiritual enlightenment,
mm-hmm.
and to they eventually often do poems and Zen poetry and that kind of a thing in order to find their own voice and then come back to society and serve society, you know. So he wrote this book that became a million seller there. And so really I describe him as kind of like China's Jack Kerouac, because he's a guy that reinvigorated, re-inspired this movement of contemporary Chinese people to head to the hills for spiritual enlightenment and for nature.
How cool is that? And he didn't have the best traditional start as a child.
His dad was a bank robber or something.
I look for
good, great characters, and then I follow character into story. That's kind of basically what I do. So Bill Porter is this amazing character whose dad was a bank robber. It was shot up in the 1920s in a heist that went bad. Got out of jail 6 years later with help from some senators, and ended up being this hotel magnate and owned 52 hotels. So Bill lived in Hollywood as a child, a gilded childhood, and eventually, wandered through his teenage years and young adult years kind of aimlessly, and ended up going AWOL from the Army, dropping out of school. And he met a Zen monk in Chinatown in New York, and it changed his life. And he decided to go to Taiwan, turn his back on American materialism, and live for 20 years in monasteries and mountains. And that's when he started his practice of translation and all that kind of stuff.
That's the most fascinating part to me. That's awesome.
How the hell did you run into this guy? I mean, he's in Port Townsend. Did you meet him at Safeway or what? I mean, how did that happen?
Our last film we did here was called The Bowmakers, which is about the five world leading makers of violin, viola, and cello bows. They all live here in Port Townsend and work in these little shops.
I'm not surprised.
So we made this film called The Bowmakers. Oh. And my producer, before that was done, said, "You want to make another one?" And so he told me about this Bill Porter guy, and I went to see him. And as soon as I talked to him, it was a done deal.
Yeah, totally.
Holy crap.
That's so cool.
It's an amazing thing that we're doing. I just don't, the way things happen, just these things that happen. And that's what we try to tell everybody. You got to keep doing it. Get yourself out there and do stuff, because you never know what opportunity will just be there.
Yeah.
Like, there's it's crazy.
There is a kind of serendipity that has arisen in every film I've done. And it's kind of something what you talk about. I mean, something is, an act of faith to just follow a character in the story. I kind of like follow the wild animal films is what I call them. You don't know if it's going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
And so, but once you engage on that trail, at least in my experience, these experiences happen that end up in the film that, wouldn't have been there if you weren't making the film.
Correct.
Yeah, definitely.
I always say I don't necessarily make my documentaries. My documentaries kind of make themselves in a way, because they turn on you. You have an idea in your head about what you want something to be about, but the stories really tell themselves. They really do, and they come to fruition different than what you might imagine as a filmmaker or what you might, yeah. Well, at least that was my experience, and especially in my first one about the giant Pacific octopus.
Great.
Here, yeah, and I just had somebody come. I was getting ready for an interview, and I thought it was going to be one kind of interview, and I interviewed her, and she brought something that I had no idea.
I remember that.
That she was going to do, and took my film in a whole nother direction. So. That's kind of why I say that, they tell themselves, because, the people that you have telling the story, and I didn't know really anything about the octopus when I started, which is the fun part, because then you learn right along with it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
You should try being the editor sometime. I was like, what the hell am I even making? I don't understand what's going on.
Yeah, the hard
time.
Where's
my script to tell me what to say?
I didn't know what to do. I'm not a documentarian person. You know what I mean? I never thought about it. I need a script. We need something.
There's no script.
And then finally she gave me an outline of what she had in her head with all the footage we had, and it made it work. But
it still took you a while.
It took me a minute.
It took you a while, and then you were like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, once I got it, dude, I locked that finger. I just, boom, just nailed it once I saw it. But yeah, the beginning, whew.
But I love documentaries because you can never know enough as a human being. And so I'm always into learning. The more you know, the better. I'll never stop learning. The day I die, I will stop learning, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. And that's
or you'll
I,
learn even more.
I don't know what happens afterwards, or I'd say maybe I'll still learn after that. I don't know. But yeah, you never stop learning. And that's the fun part of life, I guess, is finding out all these different characters and all these different stories that people have that are so amazing.
Yeah,
and this is one of them. And who would have known anything about this if it wasn't for you telling this story? Which is great.
Great point, yeah. That's a great point. So what was the production like on this? Like, did you have to go to China to make this?
We couldn't get into China because of COVID and ended up actually a blessing in disguise because ended up finding this documentary in China that was done of Bill going in to the Shang. Is this live?
You're
fine.
But it's fine. You're good.
Yeah, he can edit.
We've done way worse than that. Yeah, I think Chuck shit himself one time.
So no, you're stop it.
So we couldn't get into China because of COVID, and it was a blessing in disguise because we found this documentary that was done of Bill going into the mountains to find hermits and then him revisiting them 25 years later. And so it got this beautiful footage from China.
Okay.
And
actually went to film in Taiwan, which is where he spent most of his time and got, you know, a big part of the story there. So that was great. So other than that, it was all done here in Port Townsend.
Wow. Oh, great. Okay. Wow. All right.
How impressive.
Man, when did you start this film?
4 years ago. The last two have been about four-year projects.
Four-year projects.
So the start of the game was 7. Wow. I like taking a long time. It helps me understand the story more. Also, it gives time for something to happen that I don't expect, you know, to unfold in the story.
Okay. So, kind of like in real time.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it. That's the downfall of us making movies so quickly.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, but you know what the ending is and you can build towards that and stuff. That's the thing you know, I think Davis Guggenheim said in documentary, the last day of writing is the last day of editing. You know, you're right to that end. You're still trying to figure out, you know. If I can find an ending, then it makes it a lot easier. Then it's kind of like,
okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I definitely agree with that. I see that for sure.
You know, my entire life, I never appreciated these documentaries. Not once. Not once. And I mean that honestly.
He's a dreamer.
I never did. I just didn't understand them. They always seemed so boring to me.
But
I didn't like history either as a kid. Like, that was the worst class. Like, even though I could get decent grade in it, I would put that off. I would study the night before the exams. You know, I wouldn't read the material. I just was so bored with any history. But, you know, I was a kid. So I think that kind of just carried over until adulthood. And then I never just stopped in the narrative stuff, the nonfiction. I just love that so much. Until I met Sam. And then I started, everything she'd put on TV, I'm like, what is this? She's like, oh, this is this ID show. Or, you know, this is a documentary I want to watch. And she's watching all this shit. And I'm just like, you know, I'm like, oh, I don't want to watch. That's boring. And I go find something to do in the house. And then I gradually would just start moseying in to what she's watching.
Standing in the back of the room.
Yeah, I'm standing back there.
Unable to leave and walk away.
Yeah, and then I'd ask her questions. I'm like, what happened to that woman? Why is she crying? You know, Sam would break it down to me. But sooner or later, I started to get in grasp the storytelling that is a part of documentaries. It's a really different animal compared to the other stuff that I'm used to making. So when you started this thing, Ward, my question is, when you wanted to be a filmmaker, is this where you saw yourself, or were you a story guy? Like, what?
Let me respond this way because of something you said there. Yes, it's a different kind of animal, but documentary filmmakers have learned that, and feature filmmakers, narrative filmmakers have crossed over to make documentaries to the extent that the structure of documentaries often now follows a dramatic through line that you can mirror in a narrative film. And I think that's one of the reasons they've gotten better and better and better. And you got, you know, you got Spike Lee and Martin Scorsese and the like. I mean, they're crossing over, they're making both. And I think what one of the things I've learned is, yeah, you can shoot like mad and follow people around and the story can be amazing. And then when you get to story craft, you're in a mythical realm, so you have to follow certain, you know, orders of story crafting, archetypal story crafting, the heroes or heroines journey and all that business. Mm-hmm. You enter a special world and the person that you're with is going to encounter obstacles and troubles and, you know, all that whole thing. And so I think they're closer and closer to each other when you watch really good documentary films now and watch narrative films. I don't see a lot of the difference other than you're not watching actors.
Right.
And I think that's where I'm at finally now. That's exactly where I was going. I get it now. Yeah. But before I just didn't get it. I'm like, where's the cool guy? Where's my hero? Where's my machine guns? Where's my ninja? You know, I didn't have any of that stuff.
Yeah, the guy that busted that into the bigger public sphere was Michael Moore. I mean, you know, suddenly hundreds of millions of people were watching documentaries. And that's because he took entertainment and married it with serious subject. And that really hadn't been done to that scale before. And all of a sudden, you know.
That's a good point.
Yeah, no, he was brilliant in that way. He kind of took the Jerry Springer way of
but it was fun. I remember those,
rolled away. He wasn't afraid, and he wasn't afraid to confront people and ask the hard questions and stuff. But yeah, I do think that he opened a lot of eyes to documentaries.
What was that one? Was it Bowling with Columbine? Was that it? I think that was
I believe so.
Yeah, that was what he won an Academy Award for. And then, you know, 20 million bucks or something in the box office. But the big one that busted out was 9/11, 9/11 Fahrenheit. Yeah. That's just took off everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, so, that's right. I forgot about that one. Yeah.
That actually caused problems for all of us now, Michael Moore, because of him. You can't license a piece of music for film without spending, you know, tens of thousands of dollars. People figured out. No, actually, documentaries can make money, so let's charge $10,000 for the track.
Well, because before that, they really didn't make a lot of money, so no one really cared, right? Mm-hmm. No, I mean, you could do whatever you wanted to, you know, making a documentary, because no one really paid that much attention. You're not making that much money, so who cares? Whatever. But then you're right.
That's funny.
He definitely shined eyes on it. The fact that, it can be done.
That's too bad, too, because I'd love so many 80s songs in my movies. It's ridiculous. Fuck. Damn it.
And I guess it depends on what kind of documentary you're making, too, because, I don't know. Knowledge is power to me, so I'm always about knowledge.
Yeah.
And learning, and that's my whole point of making documentaries, is just to teach people about things. So if I'm not teaching something, if there's not an important lesson to be learned in my documentary, then what's the point of making it, in my opinion?
Well, Ward, what is your reason behind it? I'm curious.
So I look for stories that inspire and, I'll say, just deepen. So my hope is people see it and have a change of perspective or go to a place they haven't been before. And it's to tell an entertaining story. I mean, it's kind of boring on the surface, you know. Let's do a film about Zen poetry, the Tao, and, you know, Chinese mountain hermits. I mean, I had to find a way to make that something that was entertaining and getting people to laugh, because laughter opens up the other emotions. Mm-hmm. So I think it's to take that journey and then to find one self, you know, inspired or deepened from that. That's why I do it.
Okay. All right. Well, that seems to be a basis for a lot of filmmakers out there and why they do it, I would hope, because it matters if you've got your heart and soul into something.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's totally again.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hear.
Okay, so let's go back for a second, Ward.
Hey.
Oh, there.
Oh, another. Yeah, dogs.
Yeah.
I wonder.
Talking. He has to be part of it.
He's got
to
be a part of the. Like... Yeah, I get it. So let's go back then, Ward. So you're a young kid. Are you thinking about being a filmmaker?
No, I was an accountant. I was a three-piece suit.
Oh, you like math?
Guy in riding the boxes in downtown Seattle. And then I heard a word in a meeting once that made me wake up from almost falling asleep, and that word was Alaska. And the partner was talking about all these native Alaskan villages there. They had these clients, and I said, give me every one of those. So I was taking my audit bags up to remote Indian and Alaskan native villages and staying there for 6 weeks. And nature in Alaska just whacked me between the eyeballs. So that began my slow process out of accounting, because I stayed up there and eventually started exploring art and photography and theater. And I went into public radio and stuff, and then finally started making films. And film is where I end up, because it has, I call it the hotel where all the other art forms come and stay for a while. So I get to explore writing and photography and sound design and music and sometimes acting and editing and all that stuff together, and set designers, and you know, so I'm kind of a generalist, so I get to work with, like, you know, animators and people like that I can't, you know, do.
That's fun.
That's very fun.
No, it's fun.
That's the trick. That's why I'm in it. Exactly that reason, because I tried each and every one of those things individually on their own. I tried to be a cartoonist. I tried to write stories through in a comic book. I wrote novels. Now we make movies. And I like movies because of exactly what you're talking about. Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. But, you know, at the same time, there's caveats to those other ones, too. Like, writing a novel, I didn't need anybody's help. Mm. It was just me writing a story and then going out and seeing if I could sell that book. You know, but now it's like when you get that hotel like you're talking about, you got to coordinate that hotel. You've got all these people and all these schedules and all these attitudes and all these different kind of folks that you got to kind of be that quarterback for. So how'd you learn to do that?
I don't know. I think Albert Maysles, a master documentarian, said that something that struck me, and he said that filmmaking to him is an act of friendship. And so I basically only work with people that I feel a great rapport with to begin with. If it's difficult at the beginning, it's going to be difficult at the end. So I think I select people that I just, you know, have a rapport with, and that makes it a lot easier.
Definitely.
Also, documentaries by nature and the way I make them, it's not like a feature film where there's 40 people all around all the time. I mean, you know, I'm working with a few people at any given time and stuff. So I do a lot of filming myself too. So that's simple.
Yeah, no, that does help. No.
It does help when if you're a jack of all trades and you can do multiple things, that does help.
And that's another reason why I like making documentaries now, because we can just keep it all in-house. It's a lot of fun. It's pretty simple, yeah. I mean, the last one we just finished shooting, that's going to be released here soon. We actually hired a few people to help us out, but just to have some extra gear and cameras and whatnot. But they were friends of ours. You know, we've made movies with them already, so it's exactly what you're talking about. In fact, we handpick everybody that we work with.
We do.
God damn it.
They say we do.
Because of that reason. So
well,
I'm glad
podcast,
you said that word.
This podcast is
people can
kind
be
of...
catty bitches.
This podcast is kind of it started off, you know, because we couldn't get together for COVID and film some stuff. So we started this, and it turned out to be an interview process, basically, of now we know who we want to work with in the industry and who we don't want to work with in the industry.
It happens. Vicariously, it just happened.
It just happened.
Yeah, we were just sitting here, and one day we realized after a couple years in, we were like, dude, we're like interviewing them, and then like the cool people we seem to end up working with, and the people that we didn't really jive with or connect with for whatever reason, we don't.
Or happen to be too far away.
Yeah, or happen to be too far away. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you get to really know somebody when you're on the radio with them.
Like
and I
we
call
are.
It radio. This is radio.
It's intimate. Yeah, it is.
It is.
Like, it's an interview process as well, and we've never had a bad podcast. Don't get us
Not
wrong.
One.
But we do have people that we jive with, definitely can work with, and definitely cannot.
It's
and there's a lot of artists that we just interview because they're interesting.
Yeah, yeah, but, yeah. Like Ward, I would never work with Ward. He scares me.
Why?
Because he's serious. Look how serious he is. He's a serious guy. He's making serious movies.
And I'm a nerd. You like me.
No, I don't. No, Ward's a serious guy and he gets shit done. Like, look at him right now.
Yeah,
like, he's not fucking around. No, he gets it done. I love it. I love it. It's intimidating, but I love it.
And that's how he manages his hotel.
Yeah.
I've never heard
being
you
the accountant background, he's very organized.
Yeah, it's good.
I've
it's
never
good.
Heard you say you were intimidated by anybody.
No, I don't admit it very often. So this is the first.
This
first
is
time.
Great.
Right?
Yeah.
And all that dude is sitting here.
I know. That's all it takes, though. See, that's what it is. Yeah, those guys, those blowhards that try hard and blowing up and they talk big of a game and all that. I'm like, no. But Ward's just like, you know, I make movies and this is why. I was an accountant. You know, and then I went to Alaska. And then I saw my dream and I ended up going out and doing it and I did all this stuff and he just did it all on his own. How do you like that shit? That's intimidating as fuck, right? That's badass.
Well, it's kind of,
I love it.
I don't know if it's intimidating, but
scares me.
It's quite inspiring.
Yeah, it scares me because I didn't do it that way. So it makes me go, am I doing this right? I don't know what's going on. No, it's great, dude. It's
your work is phenomenal so far, from what I've seen.
Why, it's thank very, you. Thank you.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
Yes,
I always think that my latest one is my best, but I think there's something to that in the craft that I've learned. I get to apply everything I've learned to the latest one. And this is the first film that I edited from beginning frame to end because it was during COVID and then I had a serious injury. So I had to sit in a wheelchair for six months and I didn't have anything else to do. So I said, well, why don't I edit the film? I would rough out an edit for another editor, but this one I just went all the way. And
nice.
I like how it came out. I'm going to do more.
Good for you.
Yeah, good for you. See? Do you have something already in the works?
Yeah, we're already shooting the next series. It's actually a series of short films. Seven that we're going to put together in it as one. So we're following seven local stories. And
fun.
They'll be interlinking in some way.
Very cool.
Super cool.
Is it any of them about the nasty corporate builders who keep coming into Port Townsend trying to build houses?
No, that's disgusting. I wish I could make a film that would just, you know, it's really appalling. I drive by it, but, you know, it really is something that they just go in, they'll buy like 8 football fields size of woods. They'll cut every tree down and then they put up, you know, these boxes of, and they'll advertise 3-car garages and stuff, you know. I mean, it's like,
that's really sad. Port Townsend is one place that needs to be left alone. I mean, it really is a special place that should be left alone.
Yeah, people aren't going to leave shit.
No,
yeah,
they're never going
to leave. The young people and cool people have to move out to, you know, other towns and stuff.
So. Oh, it's sad. I love Port Townsend because of it's just such a nostalgic and artistic place. I love it.
Yeah.
You know what, you know why I'm intimidated, by the way?
Oh, why?
I thought you already told us. Yeah, that's what I thought it was, but then it started to build.
Okay, what is it now?
It's the inspirational stuff. Like, I live with Sam. She wants to inspire people all the time. And I do too. Like in filmmaking, I want them to be like, you know, Rocky, get up. You can do this. Let's go. Let's go. Yeah, that's how I inspire. But you guys are inspiring people in a different way. Mm-hmm. Like Ward said, he's looking for movies that inspire people, stories that will give you inspiration.
Right.
Like, okay. And then I know there's a lot of documentarians out there that look for the trash, you know, and they want to like, you know, look at how fucked up this is. You know, and they tell that story.
Well, that's kind of Michael Moore a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah. You know, and
and I don't know that it's the trash so much. I mean, it's just real life stories.
The truth. Tragic
stories of living in the world we're living into today. And I'm glad they are there. And to me, some of the best and most courageous journalists these days are the documentary filmmakers. And I just don't have that kind of a courage, and I
me
don't
neither.
Have the nature to stay with a dark subject.
Yeah,
and
me neither.
I'm glad other people can do it. I'm glad they're out in the world, but I'm just not wired that way. I can't handle it. It's the news enough is enough to
that makes sense. Okay.
I am right with you. I am the same type as you are because I'm the same. Because I want an inspiring story, a happy story, something that makes people feel really good.
Yeah.
No, I don't want anything dark and not to make people, I know there's a lot of dark in the world and I know there's a lot of trash out there. And I know it's interesting and I watch it too. But at the same time, I don't want to tell that kind of story. I want to tell the kind of story that builds people up and brings people together. Stuff like that. I don't like the dark.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm with you.
I think that's what intimidates me about YouTube, especially.
Oh.
Yeah, because I'm not that way. I am, but I'm not. Like, I want to make people happy. I want them to be entertained. I want them to cry if they're supposed to cry. I want them to laugh when they're supposed to laugh. I want them to be scared if they're supposed to be scared in a film that I create, right? But you guys have a specific thing about you that pushes you to make this type of art. And that intimidates me because I'm kind of across the board with all emotions. And you guys are like the kings and queens of a specific one. Like,
what is that?
You're pushing the envelope on in just human nature in a positive way where I'm like, but there's no negative. Well, there might be a negative in your stories, but you see them overcome it. You know, even like with your octopus documentary, there's always something that makes it all okay. You know,
those
where
stories are important.
They are, but your point in your story you're making and your filmmaking is to make that audience understand like there's hope all the time. Where sometimes if I watch a documentary or a story and it ends like with no hope and the ending was just awful, I'm like, that was a good movie. I'm like, Jesus, I didn't see that coming. You know what I'm saying? Where it's like that darkness. Like if I was making a documentary, I would be more in line to go towards the dark side of stuff. Like to really call out some of these things that I see that I just don't understand. I want to get in there and understand why, and I wanted to I just want to share that darkness with the world. But I think that would bring light.
No,
there's a real value to it. Again, the investigative journalists, especially who are documentary makers, who can go in there, go into
uncovered stuff,
into the underground and get stuff. It's just, I mean, that's, you know,
it's important. It matters.
It's a form of journalism that's just really vital. And I just don't have the staying power.
Me neither.
Or inclination for it.
It amazes me. That amazes me.
Yeah, I tend to find characters that they inspire me. And then hopefully they're interesting enough to, you know, the story unfolds, you know, around them. And usually those are people also that have had, you know, they've fallen off the cliff enough times to make their story, you know, interesting.
No, it's a beautiful thing.
Can't be all with it, you know, what do they call it? This name, hagiography, you know, just a completely positive film on everything.
Yeah.
I'm bored after 10 minutes if there isn't some, you know, turn or drama, something that's going to happen.
Some type of conflict.
Make you want to figure, you know, hang in there with it.
Yeah.
Well, there's always a conflict. There's always
true,
a conflict.
True. And you've done well at that, Sam. There's conflict in your stuff. But the overall message is always going to be like a positive one. Like I'd be so surprised if you came to me and like, I want to do this kind of documentary and it's not going to end well, Aaron. I'd be like, oh, shit, what are you making? You'll find out. You know, that'd be cool as fuck. I'd be like, what the hell? Because it's so against your nature is what I'm saying.
Definitely. And there's some things like I want to do documentaries on that there is no happy ending, I guess. Like the homelessness thing or dementia. I was going to do one on dementia. There's no happy ending there, but there's a story there and there's information there that people can learn. And there's, you know, everyone's got a story. So I think that there's still a positive message in the movie or in the story, even if it's a dark subject.
Okay, fair enough.
That's true. Even, okay, but here, I'm gonna play devil's advocate here.
Please do, Chuck.
Let's go back to high school debate.
Okay. I hated debate.
I'm a very caring and loving person also. However, so Sam's documentary on the homeless situation would be about how we need to help these people, support these people, and build them up. Someone else's
not necessarily.
Someone else's playing with the homeless thing would be about how they're a toxic thing that holds down the city and the growth possibilities.
Okay.
So that's the whole thing, is Sam would view it more lighthearted or more in a way of humanity.
Let's make this better.
Let's improve everything, as opposed to telling everybody, this is where everybody's at, this is what they're doing, we have to get these things moved, we have to get these things fixed.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the point of that?
Which is not the way I think. I can just do that with a switch.
Yeah, what's the point of that kind of a story, though? What do you get out of that? I mean, the whole point of telling a story is to come to a resolution or a conclusion.
I'm sure the dark side of that homeless one would be a conclusion from that point of view. It just wouldn't be one that would be accepted by most.
Let me just break it down to you guys.
Oh.
I just want to tell a story with everyone's perspective. I want all people's viewpoints to be a part of it. So I would want to hear everyone's point of view, like, on it.
Okay, I got you.
Whether it be dark or good or, you know, and then, I don't know, come to a conclusion or some sort of
or let the audience come to their own.
Or, yeah.
Yes, I
get
it.
But I'm big on not making a documentary that's just one-sided and one point. If I'm doing something that could be controversial or there's multiple views of,
mm-hmm.
I would want all the views to be in there.
Well,
you know that, Aaron, about
yeah,
me.
Yeah, I do. And I'm glad you said that. So you rolled right into what I was hoping you would do. So great job. No, because it's great. And Chuck, you too. Yeah, because I think the way that, like, Sam does Doc's Ward, she covers both sides of an issue, let's say. Her voice isn't there, if that makes sense. She's not siding with one or the other. She's just gathering all the information and putting it into one story so that the audience can kind of take what they want from it. Like, you're going to have some people go, I don't agree with any of this. And some people be like, I love this. And I think that's a great way to do. You're walking a line between both sides of an issue. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But you make it entertaining, which is cool for everybody, right? So, Ward, when you're out there making a movie, do you put your own take on your films other than the edit that you make? Or is this, you know, were you interested in the topic? Like, to the point where you're like, oh my God, this, I have to do this because of something you believe in.
I don't do issue films. I don't do films about subjects. So I find characters, and the characters fascinate me. And then they happen to be in a realm that's interesting, whether that's girls' high school basketball,
right,
or making cello bows or translating Chinese poetry. That then becomes interesting to me. But I'm not making a film about the cello bow or about Zen poetry or about girls basketball. It's that the character takes me into that. Ooh. And so then I follow instinct. My personality is absolutely in it because of that's who's on the other side of the camera. So whatever somebody's communicating to me is affected by the fact that it's me. And then, of course, I'm the one that's going to edit it and select it and choose what to film and all that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely crafting the story. The heart of the game was one possible way to tell that story that I found was the best way, or the way that, you know, took an audience along. But there was lots of other ways to do it.
Beautiful.
That was well said.
I
appreciate the way you said that, because that's very accurate about things. Is that you? Yeah, not every story has multiple sides to it. And if you're following just a character or characters, then you're following the character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then they take you into an issue, and then that becomes. I mean, part of the game dealt with sexism against a. African-American girl eventually and others. And so that became part of the film.
But your viewpoint, a personal viewpoint, didn't come into play there. You just played the story out with the characters, is what you're saying?
Did you hear that issue come up and we were like, oh shit, no, fuck that. I got to make this now. I'm mad. Like, did you get involved when you heard the issue? Yeah.
Oh, I mean, definitely when I came across it. I mean, that became the heart of the story.
Mm-hmm.
It was really how this college tax professor had taken over this girls' high school basketball team and was helping them find their own power in the world. And right. they ran right into the, you know, to the world as it is. And,
yeah.
And
ran into the sexism and the abuse and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it followed through, you know, that gave it universality in terms of it was no longer a film about basketball when that happened.
Yeah.
Which are usually the best sports films, by the way.
Well, I mean, all stories, especially real stories, are going to have that they're going to follow that path of having dilemmas and things like that you're going to deal with as just a human being. No matter who you're following, no matter what the story is, no matter what, you're going to have dilemmas. So I think that's the cool thing about making documentaries is that no matter who you follow and no matter what the story is about, you're going to find that. You're going to find a story.
Yeah. You know, another question for you, Ward, because I'm having fun. This is great. This is great. I love this stuff. Because I live with a documentarian person. And I know the conversations that we have while we're making her dogs. I know them. And I know there's certain things that come up and I'm like, ooh, this would be really good. And she's like, no, we're not going to put that in there that way. And I'm like, okay. Or she'll say, I want that in there. And then, you know, we'll share it with someone else to get a second pair of eyeballs on it or a third pair. And then that person will say something else. Should that really be in there? Does it matter? And then she'll be like, yeah, definitely it's going to be in there.
I told
you. Yeah. So there's things that she'll say that she wants in there. And I know because personally, that's what she wants because it's her film, right? Even though you're telling someone else's story per se, it's still yours. So I'm like, okay, that's directing her documentary. That's what you're supposed to do, right? Your vision is still of this story is going to be on a screen. And this is what you want the audience to get from this story. That's what I get from working with her. So I'm thinking to myself, when we're making these movies and I hear something as, you know, like an AD or I'm filming it for her or I'm editing it for her, there's a way I want it to tell it too. I want to get in there and do this. And then I'll make a cut for her. And most of the time we're on the same page, but there's some times we're not. So... Have you ever run into that, Ward, when you had another editor and where you wanted it a certain way, but they just didn't get it? And is that maybe why you're editing your own shit now?
No, it's not okay. the reason I'm doing it. I like that process. I work with Eric Frith on all my films. And what I liked about him is he was a story-based editor and that he would challenge me to what he thought didn't work, worked in the stories. Maybe it should go this way. And he'd be very passionate about some of those views. The main reason I like working with him, besides he was great, is he would make his case. But if I, and sometimes they were, great. I think that's right. Let's try that. Or it was, well, no, I don't want to do that, but you've raised this idea. And so maybe we should do this. So it led to a better idea.
Yeah.
But then he had this quality of absolute non-attachment to the result. If I said, nah, I'm going to go this way, he'd go, okay, well, you know, that's, you know where I'm at. And then it was on to working with him. That's why I could still work with him. And in this last film, I did find that the editor wasn't linked up to the pacing and the flow of this film, which was very personal because it is about Zen and the Tao. And that took a certain internal sense that I couldn't communicate to an editor.
Sure.
I just said, and at timing especially, I just had to basically keep bringing it back and doing it myself. So.
Yeah.
Fair. That's why, fair. Fair. That's why I asked the question. That's good. Good. Well, I'm proud of you for editing. I think that's great. I love editing. It's my favorite part of the whole process. I love it.
Yeah, I love filming and editing, those two.
Good for you.
Yeah, camera work and editing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're a photo guy. You like capturing those images, don't you? Yep. That's cool. Good for
You're an artist, just clearly.
Yeah, man.
And a great one at that.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's intimidating as fuck, but whatever.
Well, and I'm an intimidating, hungry artist. I think I have to go get some dinner.
Oh, well, let's just wrap it up here so you can go get some dinner, because we're kind of hungry.
Wait,
too.
Yeah. Are you the one that needs to be fed, or is the dog? I mean, be honest. With
yeah,
the
yeah.
The dog
yeah.
is whining so much, like, okay. Yeah.
Dog is
She won't wait, so she's been taken care of.
Ward, we appreciate you, man.
Yeah, we do. Very much. Thank you for your time.
Yeah, and good luck with all your films, man. And I'm glad you're out there making them. It's fucking badass. It's very cool. Yeah. Very cool.
The next time I'm in Port Townsend, I'll look you up.
Sometimes
I have to go up there because I may or may not be associated with one of those types of firms that are destroying your beautiful city, and I apologize for that, but sometimes you have to have a day job.
Good job. That's Chuck. Awesome.
That's why he brought it up. He's that guy.
I like your stealth way that you had brought that in. Drew me out, you know, now you know.
May or may not be the guy ruining your town, but you know.
Now you know the truth.
I'm the one, you know, defacing the signs of the developer in town.
Good for you. You know what, Ward? I got your back. You keep going.
Signatures there.
So funny.
Yeah, that's it.
Ward, it's been a pleasure, my friend.
It is. Very much so. Yeah. You want to wrap this up, Chuck?
Do your thing, man.
Ward, thank you for joining us on today on Around the Real. Thank you for hanging out for a evening conversation. I don't know if it involved a cocktail, a cup of coffee, a glass of water, or just petting the dog so it wouldn't keep whining at you. No matter which way we went with this conversation, it's always great getting to know another creative that lives in our area, that intimidates the hell out of Aaron,
is
appreciated by Sam, and is somebody I honestly, if I go back to Port Townsend, would like to sit down and have a cup of coffee with. So, thank you for spending your evening with us today on this show that we call Around the Real. It's fun. It's a great way to meet people. It's a great way to stay connected. And for the love of heaven, we say it. We live by it. Join together. Don't just talk to people. Support what they're doing, whatever you can, in whatever way you can. And everybody out there, remember, think hard, because you're thinking anyway.
We'll see everybody later.
Bye. For those of you that want to be a guest on Around the Real, please email Sam at aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
Not Messenger. Do not message Aaron on Messenger, because then he has to send you a message that says email Sam at aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com.
How come they can't just message me again?
Because nobody wants to fucking talk to you.
Can anybody reach out that's an artist, filmmaker, actor?
If you're an artist of any kind, we want to hear from you.
But we are going to vet the crap out of you.
We don't care if you make millions of dollars in Hollywood or if you're just beginning your career in the art industry. We don't care. So everybody that wants to be on Around the Real, yes, we want you.
That's aroundthereal253@gmail.com.